Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today I'm really excited to be sitting down with Carl Betts, who is a paramedic working in the UK here. And today we're going to chat about a really important topic, which I don't think we've ever really discussed before, which is where critical analysis becomes critically unhealthy, which is a paper that Carl wrote about not too long ago. So we're going to talk a little bit through that. And where sort of reflection can become a bit too much or a bit unhealthy at times, but how we can also manage to make that become a positive thing as well. So thanks so much for coming on, Carl. I really appreciate you coming down, having a chat. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, so my name's Carl Betts. I reside over in the UK, in Yorkshire. Been a paramedic for 9 years, I think, now, and as well as being a registered paramedic, I'm also one of the quality improvement leads within the trust I work in. So a lot of my work is based around service delivery and service improvement and quality improvement for patients and staff.
That's awesome. So I really want to jump into this topic with you because you brought it up to me and I never really thought about it before. And until I started really thinking about it, I was like, wow, this is actually such an important topic that we never really ever get taught about. And we all hear about reflection, but we never sort of hear about, one, how to do it properly necessarily, and also sort of the cons of it if we do it in a way that is unhealthy. So do you want to go through the journal or the journal article that you wrote or your reflection about this, and we can delve into that a little bit?
Yes, I wrote this piece purely and simply because I was witnessing and observing a lot, especially around some NQPs and student paramedics as well, but mainly the transition from student paramedic to NQP, where you leave that sort of perceived safety net of having your mentor and then you into the big wide world as an NQP. It can be really daunting because we've all been there. I've been there. It was just in a different guise. It wasn't called an NQP. It was called something else. But what I found and what I basically witnessed was people seemingly tying themselves up in knots with built up anxiety about constantly thinking about jobs that they're going on, constantly trying to reflect on jobs that they're going on. And when you start reflecting, because although we're taught in university how to reflect, and you might have to do a module on it and you might have to write a reflection, but it's not necessarily a reflection that's meaningful because it's got to hit a mark scheme for you to get the marks, etc. What I was finding is that people over-reflect and don't reflect with quality. And therefore, because you're reflecting all the time, you tend to reflect on the negatives, or you tend to reflect and concentrate on the things that may be perceived as negative. Now, if you're doing that all the time, constantly, you end up in a spiral of everything you do is negative, when in fact, what you do is an awful lot of positive stuff, but nobody really looks at it. And what I want people to start doing is start thinking about the fact that, yes, in every instant that you go to, there's potentially lessons learned. But there's also very much pats on the back. And didn't we do that well? And wasn't that quite interesting? And what I want people to do is, when you reflect on an instant, when you open that box of that instant again, for whatever reason, what jumps out is the positive first, as opposed to what jumps out to many people is the negative. And when people really reflect on jobs, it's because something significant has happened. And I generally think that significant thing is where they think they've done something wrong, or where they think something has gone wrong. Now, what I'm not saying here is that you don't reflect. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is you need to choose when to reflect and when not to reflect, because you can't do it all the time, because it's proving it. We're seeing NQPs who were absolutely burning out at a rate, a knot that I've never witnessed before. And it's really, I find it quite saddening, because you're getting some amazing paramedics coming through doing an absolutely an amazing job, but the job and their perception of what they need to do to do it is burning them out. And I find that really quite sad, really, that our educational establishments, I think we need to do more. Us as mentors need to do more to look after to look after everybody, but especially the new guys coming through. But my premise for writing this is about understanding over-reflecting can be as unhealthy as under-reflecting. And there's this really fine balance that nobody can tell you what it is, but you have to be aware of it. And I don't think people are aware of it.
No, absolutely not. Well, I was never aware of it until you reached out and spoke to me about it. So that's really interesting. And I guess it's that sort of transition or that shock that we have that, you know, we don't ever really find out anything about the case if we did anything right. And usually if we do find out something, it's either going through an error we made or I think like you said in your article, if we get a letter of thanks. So we rarely actually get any feedback if it's not like proper formal feedback, which probably makes it really challenging.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about clinical crews finding out what's happening with patients, because if you take that work home in your head, unless you get an outcome to that, you've never closed that. You've never closed that file. My analogy is a big filing cabinet, and every instant we go to is its own little file. And if you don't get the answers that you're potentially craving for that incident, then you can never fully close that file down. And therefore, what you've got is you've got another open file in your already slightly busy filing system that if you put enough of them in, they won't get sorted. Now, there's a lot of work going on around paramedic passporty type stuff and about being able to ask the hospital questions about the patient care, just for your own knowledge to say, was I on the right track? Was I on the right lines? Yeah, you were. Spot on. Well done. Thank you very much. Right. Okay. That's brilliant. That's that reflection done. I can shut that book. Sorted. But what you can tend to happen is if people don't get them answers or they don't have the opportunity to get the answers, you get the build-up effect, because there'll be another job where they're thinking about it. And it might be the similar job to the one that they were thinking about before. And it's like, ah, oh, right, I don't know whether that's right or wrong, not sure. And then you might be a bit scared or embarrassed to ask, because you might think, oh, well, I should know this. And you can just end up in a sort of spiral of mental turmoil if you're not careful. When in fact, there's absolutely no need for it whatsoever, because the support is there. It's just we as organisations and as people need to make sure that that support is open, that you can just come and ask about whatever, because, you know, I might not know it, but we'll have a discussion together about it and see if we can come to some agreement about something.
That's really interesting. There's a couple of good points in that, and particularly going back to what you said as well about, you know, reopening, whenever you think about reopening that case or that box per se, and hoping that that like positive will jump out. I think it's so easy as a grad paramedic or a student or just a new clinician to, whenever you go to a case, you know, you finish it and you go, okay, like that went pretty well. And I don't know if you have in the ambulance a proper debrief with your partner about the positives and the negatives, but I found that like lots of people just don't talk about the case and they'll just move on. And I sit there and I go, oh, like, did we do well? Like, what do you think? I could have done better, or all that sort of stuff. And I feel like there's no sort of formal time or place to ever really have a proper debrief.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it depends. When you've got a really close crewmate that you just click with, that stuff just happens. The difficulty is when you're changing crewmates quite a lot, and you're new and you don't necessarily know the station, you don't know the characters, and you don't know the ins and outs of that particular place, it can be quite difficult and it can be quite daunting. But actually in them first few months as being a newly qualified paramedic, that's actually when you need them, some of them discussions. Not all the time, but you need to know that you can have them. Because if you don't have the discussions when you actually need them, then that's just going to have a compound and build up effect. For someone like myself who used to work on a car mainly, you know, I'd go to jobs and you'd jump back in the car and you'd talk to yourself because you're the only one you've got to talk to, you know, and you can have great debriefs with yourself, but you're not necessarily going to learn anything from it unless you can discuss it. But I think organisations need to have a much more structured approach to how they do the debriefs. They need to have a real focus on nailing the positives, looking at the things that could be done better. And I'm not going to call them as negatives because they could be done better. And then finishing off with the positives. So therefore, your last memory of that job is not the negative discussion, it's the positive. Just in military terms, it used to be called a shit sandwich.
Yeah, no. I was just thinking of that. I remember reading Dr. Scott Devenish's thesis, and he did a presentation to follow it as well, and he talked about the shit sandwich and basically starting off with some good, then going through some bad, but, yeah, finishing on positive.
Yeah, and it's a no-brainer to me because even when jobs don't quite go to plan, there's generally a reason why they haven't. In our world, in the ambulance service, everybody loves, I'm a quality improvement person. I love process maps. You know, if you've got a process, you can follow it. You can't go wrong. Ambulance world isn't like that. When you go in Doris's house that nobody's been in for goodness knows how many years, you can hardly get up the stairs because of all the stuff in it. You know, trying to get in the house because you've had to break the door down with a fire brigade is a good start. Mm. You know, all of these things just compound to make things more difficult. And when you've got them compounded difficult issues arising, that's going to use a lot of your brain space, and therefore when you put under that sort of pressure, you can miss things or you can, you know, do something slightly out of process. But what you have to be aware of, there's no maliciousness there intended. There's no, you know, I didn't go to that job to do X, you know, I went to that job to do my best and I did my best, but right, okay, well, okay, we just need to look at it. It's not a problem. We just have to have a look. And we can all learn from the but. And I think that's where the ambulance sector is very, very different to many, many other areas of healthcare, of emergency services, because we absolutely have no idea what we're going to be thrown with next. And you turn up with your green bag and your defib, and that's there's your box of tricks. But actually, your biggest box of tricks is your knowledge. And with your knowledge and with your experience and with your time in service comes with it a whole host of comfort, because you're so used to making it up as you go along, which is what we're not the clinical side, but the rest of it is you're making it up. Does this pathway work? Right, no, but we're going to try a different way around it, this, that, and the other. We're very good at just getting on with stuff. And by getting on with stuff and just making do with what we've got, sometimes things don't quite go right. And, you know, you've got to look at it. You've got to reflect on it. But it's how you reflect on it and what points you put on the reflection and making it meaningful to you.
Absolutely. And it's so important. Like, you talk to so many different people. And I remember particularly Darren Hodge, who was a guest on this podcast, and he's a microflight paramedic, but he was talking about how reflection is so important. But he'd have a little book, and originally he'd start out with all the negatives. And then he came to realize that you couldn't just have the negatives. He had to put a positive in there because it would just, you know, sort of eat away, I guess, at, you know, his own mental well-being or his own confidence in the job. And I find that, I don't know if it's a UK thing or if it's just a grad thing in general, but because, for example, like in Australia, you generally get like a preceptorship with a paramedic who's been in the job for quite some time, actually. Whereas over here, you know, you thrust straight into working with ECAs or emergency care assistants, and you're expected to be the clinical lead on that truck pretty much straight away. Do you think that has a play in sort of how tough you can be on, like, yourself in terms of if you're the lead on that truck and you don't necessarily have another paramedic to say, hey, did I do this right? Or do you think this could have been done better? Or was I on the right path? If you're having to think about it yourself, I guess you'd be a bit more self-critical.
Yeah, it's a funny one, this one, because at some point as NQPs, it's like leaving home. At some point, you've got to leave home. And as an NQP, at some point, you've got to go out into the big wide world and be the clinical lead on an ambulance. Now, I have no problems with NQPs going out with ECAs, because ECAs are an amazing cohort of people. And the reason why I say they're an amazing cohort of people is, although they may not have been to university in a paramedic setting and have paramedic qualifications, what they have got is a wealth of organisational and situational experience. And I would argue that when you're on a job in that clinical setting, the situational awareness aspect of things and the experience of the doing, of getting patients out, of safely moving people, of doing this, that and the other, that is absolutely needed. And sometimes when you get two paramedics together, you can concentrate more on the clinical stuff and the other bit can get forgotten about, when in fact, actually, it's the other bit that can be the important bit, because that's the bit that's going to get them to the hospital the quickest. Now, when you've got difficult patients where you think, actually, I don't think this patient needs to go to hospital, but I'm not confident to be able to leave them at home, that's where you've got the support to be able to ring a crew line or an advice line or something along the lines of, because actually I think what new paramedics crave or need is not someone to make decisions for them, because that doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help your confidence. What it needs is somebody on the phone to say, right, give us an SBAR, tell us what you've got with this job. Right, what's your thoughts? You tell me my thoughts, and then as a crew line person or as an advisor on the phone, I'd say, yeah, I fully get that. Just out of interest, have you considered X? Oh, right, no, I haven't. That's not a bad thing that I've said to you, have you considered X? That's just us having a clinical discussion. It's no different to speaking to a GP. It's no different to speaking to a hospital ward, a stroke nurse about how you're going to accept a patient onto the stroke ward. These discussions are all very healthy, but I think sometimes people can not take offence, but once the people start questioning you about the decisions you're wanting to make, they can become defensive, when in fact, I'm asking a question or I'm stating a have you considered, just to make sure that we've got the picture fully clear in our heads. And I think it's that what a lot of people are missing. And like you said before, just because you've got two paramedics on a truck doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a debrief after every job.
Absolutely.
There's no guarantee on that. It's very much the person who you sat with, regardless of what grade they are, regardless of what job they do. If they're not keen to chat about it, then you're not going to have a debrief. And if they're not keen to chat about, but you keep asking questions, you're not going to have a meaningful discussion. You're just going to get frustrated because no one's giving you the answers that you're seeking. So I think what's more important is having a mentorship program where you have a cohort of NQPs that they know that they can call on you. So you could ring me and say, Carl, can we just have a chat about this job? Or can we just have a chat about X or whatever? Because I think that's what people are craving, not necessarily someone handholding them on an ambulance all day. Because sometimes I just don't think. I mean, I've been on instances where you've got two paramedics, and actually, if you just had a paramedic and a tech, or a paramedic and an ECA, the job would have went better, because you've got one person doing that bit and one person doing that bit, and it's end of question. No. Whereas sometimes if you've got two paramedics together, you can all jump on, you're both into the clinical stuff, and nobody's thought about the fact that we've got three flights of stairs that anybody who lives where we live, you know, the stairs that, you know, they're like the Eiger.
It's a nightmare.
Some of them. Yeah. They're lethal. They're,
I didn't know they could come this as narrow and as steep as they do.
So So yeah, I think there's a fine line. It's not necessarily just working with paramedics that people need. I think it's just having that feedback mechanism that they know is open and that they know is safe and that they know is going to be valuable.
That's really important. That's a really good point because I think, yeah, you just think, oh, I need, a senior paramedic with me the whole time, blah, blah, blah. But you don't. And that really is beneficial to know who you can go talk to. And I guess that onus also comes on you. So, like, if that's not happening wherever you are, I think you've got to reach out to those people that you trust and respect and want to have that sort of mentorship role with. Particularly, even as a student, if you find tutors you have, or if you find that you really clicked well with mentors on placement or whatever, like just seeing if you can keep them as a contact and reach out.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely valuable, the contacts you make. There's certain people who are absolutely amazing at ECGs. You know them people who them people are. So if you've got an ECG that you think, well, I want to do some reading about that, but I actually don't really know where to start with it, you go to the ECG person because you know that that person's got a lot more knowledge than you and will be able to direct you, not necessarily to the answer, but will be able to direct you into the thought process that you should be thinking about. We can't all be brilliant at everything. Some of us are pretty average at most things and you get by quite well. I'm one of them. But I know that there's people who are absolutely brilliant at such and such. And you go to them because they're interested in it. So they're going to want to talk about it because it's their thing. So you're never going to have a blocked door in front of you. And I think it's easier for someone like us who studied over here, have potentially studied in the same trust that you're now working in, than you guys who've sort of come over to the UK, and everything's new. The service is new, the country's new, the people, are new because you've never met them before. So that does make it a little bit harder because you're starting from absolute scratch. But if you've obviously been trained in this area, then you've already got that contact list or that building contact list already started.
That is true, and I guess that has been part of the challenge as well. Because literally everything from, I remember going to give GTN a few weeks back, and I was going through my contraindications, but I was thinking about the ones that I'd learnt through uni and the ones that were for my service, and then I looked at JL Calc and I was like, they're completely different. Which I'm like, how does drug contra? Yeah, anyway, but it's just funny how like small changes, but absolutely, like having to, you find out pretty quickly who are people that you can go to on station and around the place, which is really good. And usually it's people like yourself who just reach out straight away and want to say, hey, and can I support you in any way, which is really fantastic. And part of the thing too, I found is you've always got to take a little bit of ownership as well for you, for your NQP or your grad year or whatever it is for you, whatever you want to call it. Because at the end of the day, everyone's a little bit busy. Everyone's got things going on. And unless you actively advocate for yourself and what you want out of your program or your mentorship, whatever it may be, it's not really going to happen. So there's some accountability that's got to go on you and say what you want to learn, what you want to find out, and what you need.
Yeah, I think there's a big thing, and you've just hit the nail on the head. It's your grad year, it's not mine. You're the one who's chosen to pursue this career, so therefore, you have a vested interest in looking after yourself, and as part of that is getting yourself settled in. And if that's to do with, more learning or more development in your first year, it's like your driving test. You pass your driving test, but you know how to drive because you pass your driving test, but you don't know how to drive. You learn how to drive when you pass your driving test, and there's no one with your dual control sat next to you. There's no one telling you to watch that and watch the other. It's when you're out in the car on your own. That's when you get competent at learning to drive. And this is the same. And it's your year, and it's your year to find out you, how you work under pressure without that addition of. I remember cannulating the first time when I was at what would be classed as an NQP, and my mentor would always stand on my left when we were on the ambulance, and when I was going to cannulate this person, I looked and he wasn't there. And it's because for my paramedic training, that person was stood just next to me. And then you, all of a sudden you're like, all right, yep. Well, he's not here, is he? So crack on. And you were looking for your mentor just for that gentle nod, you know, that little smile, that little wink, you know, yep, come on. And it is a big step. And I'm under no illusion how big that step is, especially with the current pressures over here. I mean, it's just horrendous at the minute. But you have to do it. It's like a rite of passage. And that first year for you is where you learn to do the do. And it's a big year. But that's where you have to look after yourself. Because if you don't start getting things right in the first year, in the first 18 months, you are setting yourself up for a pretty difficult time, I think. And that's what I'm witnessing, and that's what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm sort of analysing myself. And when I'm looking around, that's I'm sort of thinking, I'm worried about you. And I'm worried about you.
That's really important. And like we've spoken a lot on this podcast about, you know, how to support your own mental well-being and look out for others and sort of proactive sort of measures to take care of yourself. And I guess it can become a bit, swept under the rug, I guess, when you're doing so much shift work, or, you know, you're constantly reflecting, or you're constantly on your days off studying because, you know, you're trying to catch up on what you think you don't know and all that sort of stuff. So what would be, before we, you know, bring it back to reflection and everything, what would be your tips, I guess, on maintaining your mental well-being during that process?
Make sure you get your rest, because you can do all the studying in the world, but if your brain's absolutely full, it's not going to take anything in. So you've got to have, and when you work in shifts, you know, you've got to have that breather, because otherwise you just get no break from it. You just get no respite from it. And that's really, it's just unhealthy. There's no other word to use to describe it. In your first year, especially if we're talking to NQPs or student paramedics who are potentially going to be NQPs very soon, have a bit of confidence in the fact that you know a lot of stuff. You're just learning how to utilize all that stuff you know. And take time just to settle yourself in, embed yourself. Don't try and get in too deep. Don't try and get in all too complicated. Get the bare basics absolutely nailed on. Because if you get them nailed on and you get them right every time, you're going to feel better. Because you know you're not going to have missed anything. You use the example of the GTN. You know, it's a drug that we give all the time. You know, the amount of chest pains we go to that a query, you know, ACS, right? Okay, so the protocol is aspirin, GTN. What you did was you referred to GRCalc, even though, which is our guidelines as such. You know what you can do where you're from back home, but you didn't just sit on your laurels and say, oh, well, we give GTN all the time. Here we go. Whack, whack. Have it. On we go. You know, what you did was you thought, right, I'm just going to check this. And setting them standards to yourself at the very beginning of your career are really good foundations, because if you start taking shortcuts in your first 18 months, that is when you're going to end up potentially making a clinical error or seeing an oversight in something, and that's when you're going to compound your already increased stress levels. When you get that letter to say, sorry, we need to have a clinical case review about this, that shouldn't be seen as a bad thing, because there's going to be some learning. But personally, you always take it as a bad thing, because you take it personally, because someone's having a pop at potentially your clinical judgment. So for me, get your foundations nailed, do them properly, don't take shortcuts in your first 18 months, and set yourself up well. And don't be scared if nobody else does it like that, all right? You have to find the ways that work for you, just like I had to find the ways that work for me. Not saying I got it right, but I was confident enough in my own thought processes to be able to review what I was doing and not make myself ill by doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, well, that's all fantastic points. In particular, I really do love the making sure you don't take shortcuts. And it's easy, I guess, if everyone around you, say, is doing or taking shortcuts or not, you know, doing it exactly by the book, it's easy to want to sort of follow the crowd and do it that way. But just being really strict to yourself and saying, no, like, I'm going to do it the way that I know is right, in the sense of, you know, proper foundations, building proper foundations for the rest of your career is so, so important. I think that gets overlooked quite a bit.
That also starts not when you're an NQP though, that starts in your student days. Because as a student, you're an open sponge. You know, you're just going to soak up what you see. So if you see everyday bad practice and you don't note that as bad practice, or practice that you wouldn't want in your own practice, then it's very easy to just absorb it, because that's what you just think is the norm. And actually, you know, the habits you learn while you're a student also massively impact the habits that you take forward as an NQP. So this all has a massive crossover. And likewise, as a mentor, I need to be assured that when I'm mentoring, I'm not giving bad habits, because I've developed bad habits over 9 years, you know, as you just have. It's just the way it is. But I have to ensure that if you're my student, Alex, I'm not going to pass my bad habits on to you. And that's why I think as a student, it's really important not to have a single mentor, because what you need to be able to do is work with loads of people, pick out the best bits that you like out of every clinical person, and then add that to your toolkit. And then what you end up with is you as a, you know, your own autonomous, independent clinical practitioner. And if you just work with me for 2 years, well, effectively, you might just become a mini-me, which isn't a, you know, that's not potentially brilliant. So that's why you need to vary your learning.
No, that's awesome. That's a really good point. Although, if I became a mini-you, that'd be fine. Now, just to go and sort of summarise the reflection. So we've talked a lot about where critical reflection can become unhealthy, and you've talked about ways in which you can do it in a healthy way. But do you just want to summarise, so we can sort of finish off on a very clear point, the do's and don'ts of reflection?
Yeah, do it because it's meaningful. We all have to do reflections because you're at university and you've got to do a reflection module. All right, okay. It sounds horrible, but that is a jump through the hoops. You've got a marking criteria that you've got to meet. You've got to put stuff in that's going to hit it. Bish, bash, bosh, done. To me, that's not meaningful. That's doing something because you've been told you've got to. For me, reflection is all about having something that's really meaningful, that doesn't have to be in on a certain date. I can start a reflective piece and it might take me 6 months, but that's not a bad thing, because through that 6 months, I'm on a journey. I'm talking to people, you know, what do you think about this? Am I right in thinking this? And that's reflecting on me, on my practice, but for what I'm writing about. You don't have to do it in 5 minutes. You know, it can take as long as you need to get them answers. And I wrote a reflection, and a year and a half after the reflection, I changed the ending, because something actually happened that proved everything to me in my own being what that reflection was about. But I didn't just forget about it once I wrote it. I thought, actually, I can now really finish that reflective piece that I thought I'd finished, but I haven't. I have now, and it's done. But that took a year and a half. I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I think it's a good thing because it's meaningful. It's got a point to me. Don't matter if nobody else reads it. It's irrelevant, okay? But it has to have some meaning for you. I like to share my reflections, and I tend to write them in a way that is useful, or I hope is useful for people, just because I like to share learning. But I do write private reflections as well. But they're for me, and they're very much have a reason to them, and they very much have a point to them. I'm trying to look at something. There's something I want to know about here. I might not know what that is at the start, but by the end of it, I will. So please, if you do reflect, don't just reflect because you've got 10 reflections to do for your NQP portfolio, you've got whatever to do. If you're going to do them because they mean something, and do them when the time's right for you. You know, you might go a couple of months without thinking about something to reflect on, but then all of a sudden something will happen, and that reflection that you start will actually mean something to you. So therefore, because it means something to you, it will actually really help you, as opposed to just think, oh God, I've got another one to do. The minute you start thinking like that, bang, stick it in the bin. Waste of time. That's just my opinion. But yeah, I haven't wrote a reflection for an academic course since uni, but I've done loads of reflections. And actually, I don't think any of them would pass a marking criteria, but I don't care because they're not for a marking criteria, they're for me. So that's my take-home message. If you're going to do anything, do it properly and do it for you.
That's fantastic. And even how you said as well, the reflection is a journey, and I really love that point. I think it really hammers home as well sort of what it needs to be about. I think we'll sign off there. I've really enjoyed this chat about basically everything in terms of reflection and looking after yourself in a grad role, and sort of the challenges that can come with it, and how to sort of take your own grad year into your 2 years, whatever it may be, into your own hands and take ownership of that and really make it what you want. I think that's really important, and I think it's been a fantastic chat about that. So just so our listeners, if they ever want to reach out to you and talk to you a little bit more about what we've spoken about today, where can they find you or reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can email me at carl.betts@nhs.net, and that's all small case letters. You can put it in the chat or you can put it on the show notes if you want. And there's also Twitter, which I do apologise. I'm just pulling my Twitter feed up because I don't know my Twitter handle, because I'm a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to things like this. It's at carlbetts_yasqi.
Awesome. I'll pop that in the chat as well.
Yeah. And you can also, if you want to put any of my reflections in the show notes, feel free. And if anybody wants to read them or comment, you can always contact me.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you jumping on today.
Thanks for the invite.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.